If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Harry Adams, CFO Joe Stent, and COO David Christie of Argentix, a specialist provider of foreign exchange services to corporates and asset management managers. So welcome, guys.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Well, big congrats on today's impressive first half results, with sales up 28% to £25 million. So maybe we can start there, Harry. What's been sort of driving that strong top line growth? It certainly seems as though your strategy, your three-pronged strategy, is working now.
Yeah, exactly. So, we overhauled our strategy about 18 months ago, which is sort of cornerstoned around people, products and technology, and overseas expansion. And, we've seen some great inroads into those three pillars over the last 18 months, but specifically the last 12 months. And all we're trying to do is sort of continue to invest in those three areas. And, it's great to see that, those investments are now paying serious dividends.
And how are you winning sort of greater market share? Because I did see your client list is increasing. You've got hundreds of new clients in the first half, and you're also improving or increasing the share of wallet with those existing accounts.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, I think it's worth mentioning that this market is absolutely vast. It's growing. It's estimated to grow between 10 and 15% year on year in the UK alone. So, we are really just trying to demonstrate that rather than clients trading with their relationship bank, which historically they have done and still to this day, 85% of corporates and institutions do trade with their relationship banks. They can use specialists such as Argentex. We're really here to provide sort of a credible alternative to those banks with a service and a technology overlay. So, we've invested heavily into our products and our technology over the last 18 months or so. And we are, we're starting to onboard more and more clients. And, with the introduction of the alternative transaction banking product as well, we're starting to onboard more institutional clients and larger corporates. So it's great to see.
And I did see the new clients you're actually onboarding. They do seem to be generating a higher average revenue than your existing clients, which sort of says to me that you're going up that food chain.
Yeah, look, we've always tended to operate on the more sophisticated end of the market. So, thanks for your intro. We do focus on the larger corporates and the institutions rather than the sort of the retail end of the market, which we leave to others to sweep up. So, yes, we have focused on that end of the market, and we are starting to have more focus on better quality clients rather than number of clients. But the number of clients is still going up, but they are better quality. They're generating more revenue, and that revenue is being generated by the more diverse product suite that we've invested in over the last 18 months.
Brilliant. And how are you finding the recent sort of demand backdrop for the market? Because obviously we haven't had a huge amount of volatility in the Forex. And I know from other sort of third parties that the institutional side is a bit softer than it has been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been a bit of a victim of our own success, really, because the last financial year, which was a short year, remember, was a bumper period due to some heightened volatility that we experienced over that mini budget. We still are completely committed to our growth strategy. We can see that there is a huge amount to go after, and with the investments that we're making, there is no reason why we won't hit our forecasted numbers. So yes, the backdrop has been a little bit more muted, a bit more benign than we experienced last year. But certainly since September onwards, there's definitely been a sort of back to school mentality. It's good to see things being picking up in Europe and in the institutional space. And we gave that sort of stub period in our outlook today of generating £10 million worth of revenue between July and three trading days in September, which is great. This has been on some fairly flat conditions. So if we're able to operate in these flat conditions, then the likelihood is that when we see market conditions returning to where we've seen them in the past, we'll flourish.
Good. And then just turning to financials, Joe, can you just talk through sort of like the sort of impressive sort of margins that you've managed to generate, sort of I think it's 29% EBITDA margins in the first half, despite actually doing a lot of investments in your tech platform?
Sure. Yeah, exactly right. So with the enhanced product offering that we have, I mean, those new products that we've introduced in the last 2 years as part of our growth strategy now contribute 15% of revenue. So by attracting higher margins and higher associated average revenue, also by attracting those higher quality clients through offering more products to them, that average revenue per client going up, average revenue per product going up, that drops through to gross margin, which then affords us the ability to invest in our growth, meanwhile maintaining EBITDA margins relatively consistent with prior half. Equally, we have maintained a fairly disciplined approach to cost, in that, we've garnered some efficiencies from that rebate of our total reward, whereby we revised our variable compensation and then set up an LTIP at the back end of last year to align with shareholders' interests in terms of that overall reward. So we'll see that manifest through the P&L in the first half, again, creating efficiencies and enabling us to hold that.
In terms of sort of like the interest rates, sort of like, situation, obviously we've had gilt yields going up and you've got a lot of cash on your balance sheet. How does that play through in the P&L for Argentex?
Sure. I mean, obviously we're in that positive interest rate environment now and we can garner interest on our own balances. But through the introduction of our alternative transaction banking product just recently, so, we have 2 to 3 months of that showing up in the first half results. As that gains momentum, we will naturally attract higher interest on those balances, just in line with other e-money institutions. And we'll be able to take advantage of that, albeit, it doesn't form a part of our core strategy, but we will be able to leverage that going forward.
And how do you see your sort of like the operating expense sort of moving going forward? Because I'm guessing you should start, as Harry adds all the additional volume on from around the sort of the world, etc. Then you should start seeing some operating leverage, I guess, ultimately anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've already seen some of that trickle through already by, true gross margins increasing by 4% in the half. But as those new products and geographies scale over time, the new products and geographies in total at the moment represent 23% of our overall revenue in the half. So as that matures and as those geographies and products scale, you can see a natural kind of enhancement of operating leverage moving forward and contributing to the bottom line.
Good. Okay. Then, David, just turning to sort of the tech platform, can you just give us a quick whiz through of what's actually been, put together so far in terms of straight through processing, mass sort of like payments, multi-currency IBAN, that kind of stuff. And then what's still in store to be rolled out across the rest of, say, the UK, and then hopefully later on in Europe and Australia, ultimately.
Sure. Phase one, phase two of our technology strategy was really around driving our product to be multi-channel, so adding the online trading capability to the proposition, where our clients can trade 50 currencies spot forward online and do all the management of them trades online. The second phase was the introduction of the virtual IBAN product, which gives the clients the ability to have 15 accounts, so multi-currency accounts held on one virtual IBAN, and then be able to collect and hold as well as pay and then do the trade. And that's all in one platform. And you know, that, as Joel mentioned, was delivered about 3 months ago. It's currently contributing about 5% of revenues, about 15% that Joel mentioned overall. And it's about 14% of the new clients that we onboarded in the period was attributable to our alternative transaction banking clients. And we're already seeing improved average revenue per client, you know, increase fivefold on the digital product because of that wider proposition. And that proposition's already been built to be international from day one. So, you know, of them clients, we do have EU clients using the virtual IBAN product and online, as well as here in the UK. In fact, the European clients are using the digital products probably twofold more than what the UK are. Probably around 18% of the clients are using the digital in Europe, and generating about 11% of the revenues in that region.
What's the reason behind that, David? Why the difference in utilization between Europe and the UK? I would have thought we would be a bit more sort of like receptive to technology, but maybe I'm wrong.
Some of it's cultural, and we're just, you know, migrating clients that are offline to online, or giving them that enhanced proposition. But a lot of the new clients in Europe are obviously net new, and they're getting sold that wider proposition from day one. So that allows us to increase and accelerate adoption. Plus, you know, generally the Europeans have a higher propensity to trade online, especially the Dutch and certain jurisdictions across Europe. So, you know, we're seeing great adoption levels. You know, overall net probably about 12% of clients. And when you talk about STP, you know, probably about 30% of our trades are now done online overall, which means the clients are doing them rather than us. Behind the scenes, that's 95% electronic and STP, apart from the really big, more complex trades, which the dealers will do themselves. And from a payments perspective, further down the stack, probably about 75%, 80% of payments are now fully digital end-to-end. And we'll continue to work on that to make it more scalable, because it's not just the front end that needs to be electronic. We need to digitize the whole stack, and we're on a journey for that. So as Joel mentioned, we'll start seeing the benefits of that digitization in increased earnings over time. But we're also seeing the benefits in average revenue per transaction and in the general client mix and the profitability of them, particularly higher margin products, come through. As far as futures are concerned, we're looking at two fronts, two pillars, really. As we focus more on institutional and corporate, we're starting to build products which are unique to them particular client bases. As an example, improving FX visibility for our corporates, because they want to understand the impact of FX on their earnings, help them manage that volatility a lot more. So we're building products around that. And then for our more payment-driven clients, delivering mass payments so that they can, you know, quite easily, upload a payment file, get that, generated and processed, you know, within a few clicks. And all these products are, you know, in various phases of development, and we'll be bringing them to market to add to the overall product mix. And things like mass payments, you could yield, you know, 200 to 500 basis points versus 20 to 30 in a standard spot transaction, where ease, speed, and convenience play more of an importance than just price. And good. That's part of our overall strategy to bring that to market.
Okay, good. And then, Harry, I don't suppose you could just talk through the sort of the overseas expansion strategy, can you? How we're progressing in Europe, or using, you know, Holland as that beachhead. It seems to have a good sort of, like, you know, you've doubled revenue there. And then likewise, what the sort of timescale is for bringing, Australia really up to speed.
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, the Dutch office has really been the standout performer in the half. It's sort of smashed management expectations, and really looking to see that flourish over the next few trading periods. Now, the beauty of the way we set the business up is that with the credible license from the Dutch National Bank, that allows us to seamlessly passport throughout mainland Europe. So currently we have a Dutch team serving the local markets. However, the sales team are multilingual. They're able to sell into other countries, which they are currently doing, as you can see from our RNS. We are looking to slowly but surely put boots on the ground in some of the countries that we've already made some fairly decent traction in. That will come with sort of increased costs not only sort of compliance function, but sort of local regulatory framework that we might need to have to put in place. So each country is slightly different, but bottom line is where we currently are is we can sell into each country across Europe, which is great. So with the tech that that David and his team are developing, with the NL virtual IBANs that we can sell into the local market, there's an enormous opportunity both locally and across mainland Europe. Australia is pretty much there in terms of, we've worked really hard on the operational side of the business, getting the banking rails in place, building the team. So as soon as we have that stamp from AUSTRAC, we will have our Australian financial services license, which means that we can hit the ground running. So we are already generating revenue from Australia by onboarding clients to the UK. But of course, with the time zone difference, that's not ideal at all. So as soon as we have that AFSL, we can migrate those clients back over to Australia. And, we will starting to garner more wallet share from those Australian clients, but also we'll be able to onboard the clients. So they're sort of sitting tight right now, waiting for us to have that license.
Okay, good. And then, Joe, just turning to sort of, the cash mountain, you've got about £19 million there, having generated a lot of strong free cash flow in the first half. Can you take you through how you're going to spend that or what you're planning to do with it?
Sure. So all of the cash that we generated, so just under 80% of our revenue on average converts to cash within a 3-month period. That's been fairly consistent over the last few years, and we're able to maintain that balance even while we invest in new products. In fact, it should be enhanced as we invest in those new products and they scale over time. So as we build that cash flow and the cash that we generated in the first half, about 30% of that was utilized to fund growth initiatives across the three pillars. The remainder was used to fund that sort of ongoing BAU activity. But also we have to remember that we need to maintain a level of liquidity within the business, given that the industry and the business that we're in, and also we have to maintain a certain amount of cash to comply with our regulatory capital threshold. So we balance all of those things together. And even after having funded all of that growth organically, we still increased cash in the 6-month period by £3 million. So,
good.
One summary of how that.
Okay, goes. Good. Well done. And then just finally, Harry, and I know this is sort of like, just very top level and an underlying aspirational, but sort of like the business should do revenues roughly around about £60 million this year in 2023. What are you sort of like the long-term targets of the board say in about 5 years? Is it to double turnover, that sort of stuff, and with C should see some operating leverage come through?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Sorry to reiterate, but this market is absolutely vast. We are a rounding error in market share. And if we're able to execute the strategy that we proved half on half on half on half that we're capable of doing, David and his team have worked tirelessly on generating the new products, which means that we can go to new markets, such as what we've proved with the alternative transaction banking. No longer is this just a currency risk management business. We are offering payments, we're offering accounts, we're doing mass payments, we can do doing payroll. There's so much that we can do in the UK alone. Then we're pushing it out to Europe and Australia. And then obviously there are some other overseas territories that we can look at too. So, doubling revenue in 5 years, it shouldn't be too difficult at all, as long as we sort of stick to this strategy, which we have done. So look, it is very exciting. We are in a really good place. We've got a great team from exec level all the way down to sort of the senior leadership team. We're very well primed for growth. And if you look at our historic growth figures from a CAGR basis on an H1, it's up 36% from IPO from H1 of 2019. So look, whether we continue on that trajectory, whether it sort of steepens or whether it flattens, I don't know. But what I do know is that this market is ripe for disruption, and that's what we're taking advantage of.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, I'm really looking forward in seeing how the business develops over the next 2 or 3 years. That's for sure. So thanks again for your time, and look forward in touching base probably for the next trading update in December or January.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Paul. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.